arguments in front of the Court of Appeals?
Yes.
Are there any questions about those? No. All right, well, counsel for the appellant may set up in People versus Ovidian, please. And by the way, this is a good time to remind everyone in the courtroom to turn off any cell phones, anything that makes noise, pagers, etc. Thank you. You may proceed when ready, counsel.
Thank you, Judge Derrick. May it please the court, Tom Carberry, appearing on behalf of Mr. Ovidian. If it pleases the court, I'd like to try to focus on the second and third issues here. The second issue is the question of the unanimity under People Against Rivera. And if I could just briefly address that, in the answer brief, the Attorney General said that because instruction number 2 outlined the charges in this count, there wasn't a problem of unanimity, despite the fact of the very vague elemental instructions. Even accepting if that were true, which I don't agree that it is true, it would require that instruction number 2.
You don't agree that it's true that instruction 2 outlined the individual charges, or you don't agree with the conclusion from that premise?
I don't agree with both. I don't agree with the conclusions. And second, instruction number 2 outlined at least 3 of the charges incorrectly. For instance, count number 7, instruction number 2 said it was the theft of a car, a 2000 Acura, whereas actual count number 7 was the theft of a motor and a transmission.
But there was no objection to that?
Not to that particular thing, no. I agree with that. We're under. There was a request for a unanimity instruction before trial, but then there were not particular examples at trial. So it's sort of a hybrid of whether they preserved this error or not, but I think, I don't know the answer what the actual standard of review is here, because they did preserve it to some degree, but then they sort of let it slide.
One more question, not to keep you out of your train of thought, but it wasn't really a request for instruction, it was a motion to elect, wasn't it?
A motion to elect, yes. Yes, and at the jury instruction conference, they didn't say anything, at least not that I remember. And then also as to count number, count number 6, the count itself did not allege any value. It alleged, it might be a typo, but it didn't allege value. It alleged by theft by threat or deception. And the instruction number 2 gave value. And then as far as count number 14, which is a conspiracy count, it doesn't mention any of the 3 cars that were alleged to have been stolen in the conspiracy count, conspiracy to commit theft receiving. So that's the answer from the answer brief, is that instruction 2 cures the problem, but the problem with instruction 2, 1, is it's inaccurate, and it doesn't really, we have to remember this case came down by an indictment, and each charge has multiple paragraphs, and instruction 2 is just a summary of each one of those counts, basically. And then as to the Rivera issue, I think it's completely like Rivera, except for the fact that we have two different crimes, but the fact that the instructions are very generic. Here we just have theft took something, anything of value from somebody else, whereas the actual charges are very specific. Then when we move to instruction to issue number 3 on theft receiving, that count was very specific and alleged 3 different cars, a black 2006 Acura RSX stolen from a man named Kemisat, a red 2006 Acura RSX stolen from a woman named Bonham, and a black 2004 Subaru WRX owned by a man named Tab. None of these people testified. Not a word of evidence came in about these 3 cars. And the answer brief says that because the car expert testified about a white Subaru, but if you look at where that expert testifies about the white Subaru, at volume 8, page 10, that's actually the car stolen from Thalia Cox, which is the charge in count 10. So you can't prove up count number 43 with evidence for count 10. And then I know that this case has a lot of issues, and it's not that complex, but the trial lawyers made it very complex by not setting forth the facts in a very clear manner. And so I would like to address count 7, which is the theft receiving of an engine and transmission, because nobody testified about the value of that engine and transmission.
Let me interrupt you on that, counsel. I think you may have overlooked a recalled witness who was a Detective Olila, who was recalled. And I believe that he was the final witness, and I think he testified that the engine was worth about $2,000 and the transmission $1,000.
If I did miss that, then I did. And I apologize, Judge Connell. Now, as I see, I have time here. Issue number 5 is a very complex issue, and I know that the legislature has been furiously working against this Bagby doctrine type of thing as much as they can. But in this case, I think perhaps it's an oversight that nobody seemed to understand that we have an entire statutory section devoted to theft of car parts. And obviously nobody raised this below. Nobody raised it. We're under plain error. But the Bagby doctrine still has vitality. Just because the legislature can cure it by following, by changing the liquor code to say that they can charge contributing to the delinquency. But in this case, they never did that. And in this case, we have a doctrine that's been in existence for years and years. When it worked to the advantage of the prosecution, when it used to be much more onerous to be convicted of auto parts theft for small dollar amounts, the Supreme Court upheld it. But now that it's the opposite, I think we should still stick by holding it. And so I would ask the court to reverse. If not for all the issues raised, I think there are substantial issues of doubt here. I think the only count that is proved beyond a reasonable doubt is the vehicular looting count. But as far as the other counts, we have some severe problems just on standard case law. I think the Rivera case is pretty clear, and I just think that they totally missed the evidence on count 43. And for those reasons, I would ask the court to reverse the convictions, except for the vehicular looting, and remand for a new trial. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carberry. Mr. Yazzie, you may proceed.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Majid Yazdi, registration 36043. On the question of unanimity that Mr. Carberry briefly addressed, as I have indicated and discussed in my answer brief, instruction 2, when read in conjunction with the remaining instructions, adequately informed the jury of the underlying facts for each case, and there is no reasonable likelihood that the jury might have disagreed on the underlying facts for each count. So based on that argument, there is no unanimity problem.
How do you respond to the contention today, Ms. Carberry's contention, that there were three factual errors where the instruction 2 did not align with the indictment?
I can't recall exactly what instruction 2 says about any particular issues, but as far as I can remember, when combined with the specific instructions dealing with each count, instruction 2 adequately narrows down the specific charges. The other instructions narrow down the charges specifically to what the underlying act was, and the evidence supported those charges. So I'm sorry that I cannot address specifically any particular issues that might be. But overall, once instruction two is read together with the other instructions, it adequately informs the jury.
I'd like to ask about the verdict forms. Did the verdict forms the jury brought back describe the thing that the defendant was supposed to have stolen, like the Acura or whatever, or were they just generic?
If Your Honor is referring to the last claim, or is it a different issue?
Well, just any of, how many counts did they return again?
I believe some 40 counts.
Right. What I think I heard Mr. Carberry saying is the jury might have been confused between the vehicles and what was taken. And so I haven't seen the verdict forms, but when the jury filled out the verdict form, did it say theft of more than $500 to wit a 19 whatever Acura, or was it just left blank?
The verdict forms did not include all the information necessary, but they referred back to the instructions that described it. And that's why the issue of value has been adequately covered, because those verdict forms read together with the instructions covered those issues.
Thank you.
Regarding sufficiency of evidence, there are two claims, and Mr. Carberry again briefly addressed those. The problem on count 43 is that there is a discrepancy between the indictment charge and the instruction. Mr. Carberry focuses on the indictment and finds a deficiency in the instruction because the indictment was broader than the instruction itself. But once you focus on the instruction, there is no problem with that, because the evidence presented at trial showed that the defendant conspired with Mr. Robertson to rent a storage unit, and then knowingly asked him to store the car with the stolen parts in that storage unit. And that was the basis for the conspiracy to commit theft by receiving. But Mr. Carberry focuses on the indictment and argues that the conviction was not based on sufficient evidence because some of the information in the indictment had nothing to do with the specific charge under count 43. So based on that, there is no problem of sufficiency of evidence. And as to count 7, there was sufficient evidence, as Judge Connolly pointed out. Not only there was additional evidence to support the value of the transmission and engine, but as I have argued in the answer brief, when you consider that in March 2006, the car that contained the engine and the transmission was sold for $7,300, and common knowledge is sufficient to support the fact that the engine and transmission in a running car, drivable car, is worth at least $500. On the Bagby issue, I think the basic problem is that Mr. Carberry misconstrues the Bagby doctrine. As it is stated in the opening brief, which shows the misapprehension on this, Mr. Carberry says that the Bagby doctrine requires the prosecution to charge the more specific statute unless the statute by its own language allows charging the less specific statute. Actually, the Bagby doctrine is just the opposite of that. If you have a general statute and a specific statute, the prosecution still has the discretion of charging under the more general statute unless the legislature has indicated, based on the provisions included within the more specific statute, that the prosecution should not use the more general statute. And the opening brief doesn't argue that that's the case. And comparing the Bagby facts, the liquor code, with the situation here, it's obvious that the General Assembly did not intend the auto theft statute to deprive the prosecution of charging under the more general theft statute. And more importantly, here we are talking about theft by receiving, which is a completely separate conduct and crime from theft of auto parts. This is theft by receiving, which has been declared to be a completely separate crime, not on extension or limitation of auto theft.
But you could charge a person who receives, knowingly receives stolen auto parts under the auto theft statute.
I don't believe so.
You don't think there's a provision in there that allows charging for knowingly receiving stolen auto theft auto parts?
As far as I can tell, there is no provision that allows the prosecution to charge for theft by receiving under that. So the, in this case, the prosecution was even required because that was the only applicable statute to the offense.
Wouldn't that person be complicit in the theft of auto parts if you receive auto parts?
Yes, but what I'm suggesting is that theft of auto parts and theft by receiving are two distinct crimes.
No, I accept that. I can accept that. I'm just having trouble with the notion that a person who knowingly received stolen auto parts could not be charged under the auto theft statute as a complicitor.
Yes, it, again, I agree that it can be charged as a complicitor for that, but not theft by receiving. And more importantly, the, as the Bagby court indicated, we have to look at the overall the statute and whether state police power, for example, has been invoked. In the liquor code, there was a legislative declaration specifically addressing that the purpose of that statute was to invoke state powers, police power. We don't have any statement under the auto theft statute to show that there was such an intention behind this statute. And just the detail, when you compare the comprehensiveness of the liquor code with the auto theft statute, there is no comparison. You have under the liquor code about 110 pages of statute specifically addressing various crimes and specifying the punishment for those. Under the auto theft statute, which covers only about 10, 12 pages, there is no comprehensive regulation. So under the Bagby doctrine, we don't have any limitation on the prosecution to charge under the theft by receiving statute. Unless the court has any questions, I stand by the arguments presented in the opening brief addressing the remaining issues, and we ask the court to affirm defendant's conviction.
Thank you, Mr. Yazzie. Any rebuttal?
May it please the court. Judge Rothenberg, you asked about the verdict forms, if they were generic. They were generic. They did mention the count. There were a few that actually had the dollar amount, and we're not complaining about those. The ones I complained about, I attached to the opening brief. This was before we had the CD-ROM situation. As to the indictment compared to the instruction, the problem with that argument is that the evidence that the prosecution now wants to use to support count 43 is the same evidence that went to find Mr. Avigian guilty for count number 10, which is the theft of Thalia Cox's. If that's the case, then we have a double jeopardy problem, because he got 7 years, I believe, on that, and also got punished for the Thalia Cox. But I don't think that is the case. I think the indictment is very specific, exactly what cars we're talking about, and there was no evidence of those cars at all. And then, Judge Connolly, I do agree with you that, you know, under our complicity doctrine, you can charge a person as a complicit or under either one of the two statutes. I don't think there's a problem with that at all. And for those reasons, I'd ask the court to reverse Mr. Avigian's convictions and remand for a new trial on the car cases. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course. Counsel may set up for the next case, please.